What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. This week, we jumped into a whole bunch of stuff. We kicked off by talking about my attendance at the Nomad Capitalist Conference in Kuala Lumpur, a lot of behind-the-scenes info that you might find interesting. We then spoke about how broken the banks are in Australia. This sort of stemmed from how much discussion there was in Kuala Lumpur about so many people looking for alternate bank options. We spoke about some really powerful solutions that every Australian should be able to get access to. We then talked about a Henley Partners wealth migration report that revealed that Australia is experiencing a mass migration of millionaires leaving the country, the highest in the history of the country, and what that means. And then we revealed some very interesting data out of the Financial Review that actually had me speechless as Eric shared real numbers that were presented in a recent Financial Review event in Sydney, data from Dexus, data from the CEO from National Australia Bank that absolutely floored me about how screwed up we are right now. One that I'll tell you up front is that of 700,000 immigrants in the last 12 months, only 5,000 of them have any trade skills at all in the middle of the biggest housing crisis this country has seen. So I think you'll find this one really interesting. Tune in right to the end. As always, it gets better as it builds, and we hope that you enjoy it. We want to bring you good news stories as well, guys, and there is a really nice good news story right at the end. A big thank you to you guys that made it happen here in the Unemployable community. With that said, remember, like, subscribe, and comment. Go. All right, guys, welcome back to the Unemployable Pod. Good to have you all back on the show. Eric, Mark, and James Denham. How are all the boys today?
Good.
James and Eric, sub back in. James.
Yeah, we got benched last week. So, anyway.
That's right. Got the whole band back together. It's nice to see you boys.
Yeah, good. Nice to see you guys.
Yeah. So, Adam, how did Nomad go? I think you guys were going to ask me, but look, I just got back from Nomad Capitalist in Kuala Lumpur, which was a pretty cool experience, actually. I got the gig because everyone asked, how did you get that gig? You know, like, how did Mr. Henderson reach out to you, Andrew? So it was interesting because the guy that was scheduled to speak on Bitcoin was none other than Saif Dean Ammous, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, which I've been telling everybody, don't buy Bitcoin, buy the Bitcoin Standard. And then once you've read the book, buy Bitcoin. Anyway, so he's probably, I think, one of the most highly regarded, if not the most highly regarded intellect and one of voices in the world around Bitcoin. So when I got the call, they said, so Saif has just dropped out, you know, for personal reasons. And would you mind stepping in? I was like, oh my God, yes. But just so you know, I'm not Saif. I'm about 50 IQ points lower. And, basically a hillbilly from Australia. But it was really good. We had a great time. And the event, like, if you've ever seen anything about Andrew's events, or if you've seen anything about Andrew and that brand, Nomad Capitalist, the event was exactly that. Like, from, you know, the person who booked my flights to, you know, the assistant that managed it, everything was just like getting treated like an absolute rock star. They had the VIP pickup with the limo van type thing and put you up in the best hotel in a beautiful suite. And that sort of extended all the way through the experience. And the crowd was super sophisticated. And the people I met were just amazing. Like, I was in the green room and a guy comes up and says, oh, you're the Bitcoin guy. I'm like, yeah. He says, I'm the former finance minister under Boris in the UK. And I was like, oh, nice to meet you. How you going? And then we were in a private reception and he sits down next to me and goes, man, you know, like Bitcoin, because he's now an investment banker in London. And he said, you know, Bitcoin was the biggest miss in the history of like London financial scene. And we were the epicenter. We taught the Yanks about capitalism, you know. It was really cool sort of having that level of access to people. So there was some fascinating people there, really smart people, but really not many of them knew much about Bitcoin at all. So wow. It was really cool to get up with the Bitcoin hat on and orange pill a few people. And I got swarmed afterwards with people asking questions. And I was there with Tony from the Bitcoin Way and the other two owners of the Bitcoin Way. And it was, we had a great time. Tony took us out to dinner. We were smoking stogies at the St. Regis and having a good time. So overall, it was amazing. Met some really incredible people.
How many people in the room at an event like that?
I think it was about 600 that were in that event, right. And it wasn't cheap. It was like, I think 4,000 US was the cheapest ticket. So you're talking 6,500 Aussie for the cheapest ticket, and they went up to $30,000 for VIP tickets. And like I sat obviously at the front with the VIPs, and like one day I'm sitting there, and the guy next to me was the CEO of the largest crypto exchange in Turkey. And like you just sort of hop around, you meet these extraordinary people. And it was really interesting. Yeah.
So what were the crowd like? You said that a lot of them didn't really know about Bitcoin. What type of people were they? What are they investing in? What kind of businesses?
It was interesting. Like everybody was extremely well dressed, because you know Andrew, he's like a super dapper guy. He won't go anywhere unless it's in a Rolls Royce. You know, like he's very sophisticated, So his crowd is, and a lot of it's about sort of foreign banking and multiple passports and all of that kind of stuff. So the crowd was kind of like a fancy looking group of rebels, because ultimately they're looking to minimize their tax. They're really like all expats. So most of you'll bump into someone, where are you based? Well, I'm based in Hong Kong, but I've got passports in Panama, or, you know, like really interesting. And a lot of them, like the thing that was kind of interesting, they're talking about how to have babies and how they travel when their wife's pregnant, and they'll go to Mexico and they'll have the baby in Mexico so that the Mexican baby has Mexican citizenship, which has access to Schengen area. And like, and then when they have a second kid, they'll go to Japan or whatever. They'll go to these different countries, and like, so, you know, they call it birth tourism, and they actually like build their family and birth them in different countries so that the generations to come have access to multiple, you know, passports and options, which is really interesting.
That's so crazy.
I'd actually not done much research into Andrew, but we'll get to it later on. I had Topher on yesterday again for a second round, and he mentioned that he was kicking himself not being up there and knew you were speaking, and mentioned a must watch is the Five Flag Theory on YouTube. So I've got that on the watch list for tonight, actually. So it'll be certainly interesting.
Well, to give you a bit just of metrics, I spoke to Andrew, like, because I when I was a speaker, they invite you to several sort of closed rooms with just their high-end ticket holders. There'd be like 20 people there that paid 30 grand to be there. And in my contract, I had to go into these rooms, which I was obviously more than happy to do. But I had a chat to Andrew a few times, and he's got a great, like, all he does is help people with Plan B residencies. He's got 100 employees around the world just moving people out to other jurisdictions, heaps of Americans. I reckon Australians would have been perhaps the most or second most represented people in the room. And I had like one guy come up to me and said, Adam, I've been following the pod. I love what you're doing. I've got $300 million worth of property. Then I met another guy going, I've got $70 million worth of property and I'm looking to get out of the country. I've had enough. I was just shocked at how many people of the Aussies knew who Unemployable was, but how many Aussies there were in the room that all watching the content, which is great.
Sorry, didn't see you there. While you're here, actually, we've got a new coaching cohort that just opened up for the Unemployable Property Coaching Program that you get taught on how to become a property developer. One-on-one coaching, bi-monthly coaching, and also events where we get a full coach bus with all the students and go to 6-7 different development sites. When I say development sites, from one lot to 10 lots to 50 lots, you get to see exactly why we buy it, how we buy it, how we fund it, and also how you can do it yourself. The next day, we had an amazing event at the QT Hotel here on the Gold Coast, where we had all of our consultants come in and teach everybody on what they're looking for with sites, what are the different trends, and how you can become a property developer yourself. Now you see me on the video, but who you're gonna be getting coached by is Shannon and Carson. Who's Shannon and Carson? 4 years ago, Carson was cleaning carpets. Shannon was a machine operator. Today, they're doing over $100 million worth of land deals. I know you're listening, and I know you want to take action. And if that's you, click on the link below or go to www.unemployableproperty.com.au and register your interest, and one of our team will reach out to you, and we'll see you on the next bus. Now get out of here.
We've been speaking a lot about like Dubai and different tax havens and traveling and being mobile and mobility and things like that. I just listened to Ray Dalio on DOAC, Diary of a CEO, and one of his answers to how to deal with the world that we're currently in was mobility, right? Obviously, mobility of place to live, but also mobility of capital, right? So it's really, really interesting that you got people with $70 million and $300 million portfolios that are thinking, how do I make this more mobile, make myself more mobile? And ultimately what it comes down to is it's, you know, when you're at that level, it's not about saving tax. It's about community. It's about going to the place where you are most welcome and most wanted. And I think
that's Nomad's phrase is, you know, go where you're treated best. And all of the people in the room were all about that. And it was really cool because they were all people that were super proactive about keeping as much of their wealth as they can. And there was people who'd set up all kinds of things. Some people in Indonesia, some people in, all kinds of people. And it was absolutely fascinating.
What other speakers were there? What else were they speaking about there over those few days?
I got into a bit of an on-stage fight on a panel, which was fun. So they were talking about gold, and they sat me next to an Israeli guy who had an international business storing gold. That was his business. He operated gold vaults in Switzerland and Israel and different places. And then there was another woman who was like a Peter Schiff. She was an American woman, and she sold gold. And of course, they were pro gold. You got to buy gold and all of this. And I got into a bit of a fight because she was like, "Oh, you know, I wear gold jewelry and a gold watch, so that if the apocalypse happens, I can always go into a jewelry store and turn it into cash." I'm saying, "Let me get this straight. You know, like when there's chaos on the streets, you want people walking around in a gold Rolex covered in gold chains?" You know, and I'm like, I said, "Oh, I'm not sure that's the best advice." And then I said to them that, you know, like because they were like, "Gold's better than Bitcoin," and I was saying, if the government wants to pressure you, because I've just come from the Tommy Robinson rally, and while I was there, there was a guy who yelled out, "Who the F is Allah?" Right? And that guy is now in jail for 3 years within a few days of the rally in the UK. And I said, so everybody in this room needs to realize that you might not think of yourself as a criminal, but the definition of criminal is changing really, really fast in certain parts of the world, right? So if the government wants to pressure your gold vault, if I've got my gold in your vault and the government rings you and says, "Hey, this Adam Hudson character, you know, are you KYCing me?" And they were like, "Oh, well, yeah, we've got a..." I said, "All right, so you've got my name. The government knows that my gold's there. And if they pressure you, would you seize my gold? Would you stop me if the government said you have to seize his gold? What would you do?" And they both said, "Well, we'd seize your gold." And I'm like, right. And this is where self-custody of Bitcoin comes in, where they can't do it, and I'll never have that situation, and the government can go fuck themselves. And then the crowd just went, "Whoa!" You know, like, so it was sort of fun. And they weren't, like, I was a little bit different because most of the speakers were really polished and, you know, suits and ties and everything. And I don't know if I'll get invited back, actually, but we'll see. But I just thought, at first I thought I'm going to go buy a suit and all this, but I thought, you know what, I'm me, and that's where I am in my life. So it was fun, though. I mean, I was really honored to be there, and I'm very grateful. But to answer your question, Eric, there was gold speakers. There was people who were talking about international banking. There were people talking about multiple passports. There were tax planners. Andrew talked a lot about where he's focusing his investment. He does a lot of emerging markets investing. So invest in banks in emerging markets, energy companies in emerging markets, why he's investing in those markets. He's renounced his US citizenship, why he did that. So there's lots of little nuggets when you just start to listen to these people. For a lot of it for me as a Bitcoiner wasn't super relevant because I was just, you know, I think differently, but it was really interesting.
What do you think the three biggest takeaways were from it?
Look, I think this, the number one, like being in the room, like Eric said, is really worthwhile. And just meeting people and keeping your brain stimulated and being in a new city like Malaysia was amazing. Malaysia itself was amazing. Going out at night to the rooftop bars, the best views you'll have in a nightclub bar, or, you know, a nighttime bar. But I think just seeing how many people are restless and how many people are turning up at these events and how much interest there is. And I think it ties into like a Henley Wealth Report, which I might drop in here. It came out about 3 or 4 weeks ago in Australia. Henley Partners released their annual wealth migration report. And in 2025, they expect that there will be 142,000 millionaires from Australia leaving, which is the highest on record. Now, this is not net migration. This doesn't account for people coming into the country. This is people just going out. So the net is probably lower, but just on a net, on an outbound basis, it's the highest. But I also want to qualify that by saying that the average Australian adult net worth is near $1 million now. So it's still just measuring the flight of capital. So, you know, 142,000 millionaires, if they were all just 1 million, which they're certainly not, but just say they were, it's $142 billion of mobility that's leaving this country, which is interesting. And next year, they're expecting it to be 165,000, breaking a record once again, which is kind of interesting. So I think anybody in that space of migration is very busy. And I spoke to Tony from the Bitcoin Way, and, you know, he said that their number one country of inquiry is Australia. And I said, can you put that into context for me? Like, how many inquiries a day are you getting for self-custody of Bitcoin and Plan B residency out of Australia? And they said, I don't know, 20 to 30 a day, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's I had an experience yesterday that really pissed me off. And, you know, I was thinking to myself that after, I'm like, where is this going? Anyways, I was moving some money around yesterday and I've got some money sitting in an offset account on a property and I wanted to move it around. And in this offset, I can only increase it up to 50 grand myself on a mobile, on my mobile app, right? And I had to transfer more than that. So the only way you can do that, it's called the bank. So I called the bank. I'm on hold literally for over an hour and 20 minutes, right? I'm doing work and it's just, you're on hold. You got the hold music on. Somebody then picks up and I said, hey, listen, I got to move some money around. And he says, how much? He's like, well, that's more than what I can authorize, but I will send you to the payments team. And I said, okay. I'm like, they can increase it more? They said, yeah. He said, yes, they can increase it more. Okay, no worries. I'm then on hold for another 20 minutes. So an hour and 47 minutes in total on hold, right? Just so I can move some of my money sitting in a bank account. Then lady comes on and I explain to her, hey, I need to move some money around. This is what I, you know, these are the amounts. She goes, oh, well, that's more than what we can do. The only way you can do that is if you give me where it's going and I can do the payments on your behalf. Can you believe this? I was like, so you're telling me I've got money sitting in your bank, right? That's my money. And I'm not talking it was millions of dollars, right? It was 180 grand's worth of money, you know, that I had to do in chunks, just moving money around. And she wouldn't do it, right? So I've had to, now this is the second day of me just doing it myself, transferring, and then have to transfer it a little bit more tomorrow. Or she has to physically do it on my behalf and give her the BSB numbers and the account numbers and the references and all this. And I got off that phone call. I screenshotted it. I said, listen, I want to talk to somebody, right? I want to talk to management, put something in the notes, and I want them to give me a ring tomorrow because I want to have a discussion about this because I might have to move from you guys for this particular property because I can't, you know, handle this. Guess how long I was on the phone with them today for? 0 minutes. They haven't rung me.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you're dealing with. Like it gives me the shits, right? Here I am trying to move some money around. Meanwhile, I've got Adam frolicking the world with Bitcoin on his MasterCard doing whatever the hell he, and I just think to myself, like, where are we going? Like, where's the banking system going where you can't even access your own money? And I understand why, but give me a break.
Yeah, there was a lot of that sentiment there. More and more people wanting control and, you know, diminishing trust in banks, which is interesting. But I'm interested, guys. So go ahead, Mark.
No, just a quick add-on. And it's not just the financial controls. Like, I think part of it is that these corporate entities are a little bit broken. I'm not going to mention the bank, but I had to get a loan statement for tax purposes for 2024 from a loan account that had been closed. And so I rang my business banker and the business banker said, I can't do it. You got to go into branch. And it was a business loan. So I go into the branch and the branch said, I can't do it. You have to ring this number. So then I rang that number And the number said, I can't do it. You have to go back into the branch. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is, and so I basically went back into the branch and got it. And somehow I got passed around to every single person and no one took ownership or accountability for it. Like, this is not just financial controls. This is broken systems.
I've had, like, you know, been using Wise since I left Australia, and any Australian that doesn't have a Wise account or Revolut, if you got in Europe, honestly, it's just an absolute game changer.
I use that when we go overseas. Wise is the best.
I funded my Cyprus setup, which was 200,000 euro into Cyprus. I did it through Wise. It was so easy. I paid for a 40,000 euro BMW with Wise.
Very competitive rates.
Super competitive, better than the bank. And faster, like really instant payment transfers. And a couple of times where I had to go through some verification, it was within minutes that it was sorted out, no problem. Like, it's just like how you would hope a bank would be, and the ability to spread funds across multiple currencies, massively minimize your fees. Like, everyone listening to this should get a Wise Payments account. It costs you $10 to get the physical card sent out to you. And, mate, it's a game changer. And if you're in crypto, like, Aussies are so fortunate to be able to use Bybit. Like, I have a MasterCard on Bybit, and I pay for taxis, hotels, everything coming out of my Bybit.
Just to that end about fuck the banks up. We've got a team member in New Zealand went to pay her $920 for the week, whatever. It got bounced back. It was $120 in fucking fees to get it bounced back into our account. And she was like, nah, Wise it is. So we would literally today send out Wise accounts for us. So even though Westpac is in New Zealand, bank to bank, something fucked up. They wouldn't take the payment because it's a new payment. And we're $120 in the hole on a $920 transaction. I mean, more money, but on a percentage basis, it's massive.
That's massive.
Has anyone looked into Gemini?
No.
Because with Gemini, if you can, it's obviously an American company, but if you can apply for a Gemini credit card, they will give you cash back for every dollar you spend in Bitcoin.
That's right.
And so I've never had any experience with that.
That's the Winklevoss owned company, the Winklevoss brothers, who created the Facebook idea that Mark stole, apparently, allegedly. Anyway, but guys, like, try this stuff. Like, honestly, if you've got a Bybit account, I literally went onto Bybit, I signed up for a debit card, and it was in my Apple Pay wallet within 5 minutes. And it's just directly attached to my crypto balance. And I'm able to just use my crypto to pay for everything. Like, I checked out of Maybourne Hotel in Monaco, straight on Bybit. And the girl goes, what's that? And I'm like, it's my crypto. And like, she's going, are you paying in crypto right now? I'm like, yep. And she's like, wow, paid taxi, coffees. And people at Nomad were like, oh, you can't use Bitcoin in anything. And I literally, like, I'll show you, I literally would do this. I would go to my wallet. And for those watching online, you can see here, right? Astor Bar. This is on the Bybit debit card. These are real transactions for normal stuff, you know, hotel, taxi, Western in London, etc.
And get this, lo and behold, in Australia, because I tried it, because I've got a couple of Bybit accounts, you can't get a Bybit debit card, so you can't spend your crypto in on a debit card in Australia.
Oh,
yeah. That was my experience, because I tried to get one, obviously. I did.
James, I think you can, because I know Australians that have done it. So, okay. I don't know. I'll try again. Great. Anyway, let's move on. I'm curious to hear what Topher had to say, because Topher was in the studio yesterday with you boys. And for those who don't know who we're talking about, Topher Field, one of Australia's leading voices in the freedom movement and standing up to government. What was that like? Like, what was the story there?
You go ahead, James.
No, I'm just in round number two. It was excellent. I mean, when you need to sit back and ask one or two key questions, and when he talks, you listen. So this is a very, very intelligent guy, very well articulated, and he certainly drives home his message in a very clear format. And he's certainly one of the key takeaways there is for me anyway. He was such a patriot of Australia, and I'm going down with the Aussie ship, and now he's pretty much taken up your mindset and getting ready to make a move. I think
he's going to leave.
Yeah, well, getting prepared to anyway.
Maybe
or have the opportunity to, like a few politicians we've had on our podcast have all said, have some investments offshore and get a second passport, and that's coming from Aussie Pollies. So,
I'm interviewing I'm interviewing Matt Cameron in a week or two. He was all over the Daily Mail and Channel 9 and all the radio shows.
I like
him. Because something went viral that he put up. He's basically a Sydney property guy who left with his young family to Bali. And I've teed up the interview, but something Matt said, which when I was chatting with him, he said, you know, Adam, I've been copying a lot of shit. Aussies saying, oh, you left Australia, you're a traitor. He says, let me tell you, Australia left me a long time ago. And from a policy point of view. And I was like, you know what, that's actually true. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What else did Tope have to say? I mean, that's sad actually to hear, because he's an asset to the country. Like, he's such a good guy and great thinker.
The two big takeaways for me, and I tried to press him on it with relation to debt and things like that. But the thing that he has like an intimate knowledge in is political systems, and through his experience and things that he's seen in other places like Venezuela and some of the telltale signs of those things starting to happen here in this country. And the biggest takeaway for me was the way that he was able to articulate that the government is not the answer, and that throughout history, if you do your homework and you do your research, you'll realize that the problems that we're facing, and we go into detail about the problems, but the problems that we're facing at the moment really cannot be solved by government. They're more created by government, and they have to be solved by an increase in productivity from the private sector. And he basically explained.
Mark. Good old.
You guys. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Mark, we lost you. We lost you, Mark. The problems cannot really be solved by.
Yeah, the problems cannot be solved by the government. They have to be solved by increases in productivity, and the increases in productivity come from the private sector. And he basically went into detail about how the policies and the decisions that the government make continue to put us in the opposite direction of where we need to go. And he's not outrageous or extremist. Like, he articulates a point. He's able to talk both sides of the argument. He's not inflammatory in any way. He just basically speaks the facts. And I think, you know, people like him, if we were to lose people like him in Australia, I think that is really a loss, because these are the kind of people that we're turning to understand the way things are going down. He's the one that has an educated and articulate voice. And, you know, to lose people like that, I think is a bit of a travesty. So I just hope people like listen to him, because he's not inflammatory at all. And he's got such a great way of communicating the message. And, you know, he was just saying that the Australians seem to think that government is God, but it's not. And so, yeah, it was really, really good.
I just want to be clear. Just for the fact, I didn't say he's actually leaving Australia, but he's certainly in that stage of preparing.
Right.
Should he want to have the need to leave, he certainly would be going down with the Aussie ship, as his exact words.
Preparing for the podcast. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I was just going to say, and he explained why, like, he, from personal anecdotes, he explained why going down with the ship is not the smartest thing. Mm. And I think that's become a bit of a theme lately. You know, Ray Dalio was talking about it. That there's some pessimism as to whether the problems that we're seeing can be solved. And while these marches and public show of support for Australia and et cetera are encouraging, the reality is they're probably not going to do much to solve the problem. And so Topher is really great on focusing in on personal responsibility as well within the system that we're in. And I just feel like so many more people would be better served to tune into that rather than to get aggressive online.
People are tuning in, because he now has 111,000 subscribers on YouTube, and when he was on our podcast last time, he said he had about 30,000 or 40,000. Mm. And this is all organic, right? So obviously people are enjoying his content and they're subscribing. But I was looking at
Eric, that's a good point. He also said YouTube, he decided that YouTube was the best platform to focus on to get his message out over Instagram, over X. It was YouTube. Yep. So that was also
that's his priority.
And Mark, you could probably recite this a bit better than I about that, because you're sort of studying the YouTube facts. He was saying it felt like the tide was against him on YouTube, but there's been a semi self-admission by the powers that be at YouTube and some of these streaming platforms that they were very left
left bent, and now the right is now having a bit more. He's noticed this, whether it's a feeling, but he's noticed his voice is getting a lot more exposure of late than it has in the last however many years he's been on the platform.
Yeah, he basically said that he's noticing the left-leaning commentators are complaining that their content is not getting as much engagement as what it was. Mm. Now he's anecdotally finding that his more conservative type content is getting a bit more of a push. So he seems to suspect that there's new algorithms as well.
When I listened to the original pod, and I went through the comments, and there's a lot of comments that said, I love how you guys are allowing him to speak. And that's exactly what we did the second time around, right? We asked a few good questions, and he just articulated, he elaborated on the topics, he weaved it back in, answered the questions. But he's a very intelligent man, and there was a point where he actually got quite emotional. I don't know if you guys noticed that, mm-hmm. but tears did come to his eyes in this one particular moment when he was thinking about that guy in Venezuela that fought for the country, and a lot of his mates left and he stayed, thought he was doing the right thing by himself and his family, and the country just went to shit, and you know, his kids were malnourished, and it was you could see that he brought himself right back there into that seat looking at that guy, because that's when the tears came to his eyes. So it was really powerful interview. But it's amazing, a lot of these high intellects that we've been interviewing lately, especially in the political landscape, are very well versed in history. Very, very well versed in history. It goes, you know, it reminds me how not well versed I am in history. when you start listening to these guys and the information that they can retain. And honestly, I'm so grateful that we've created a platform that we can actually interview these people and get, some of their time, you know, on our platform to give to the rest of the world to listen to, because it's very, very powerful.
Mm. One video that dropped this week that I saw that was interesting, somebody who is certainly, you couldn't accuse him of being non-inflammatory, and that was Tucker Carlson talking about Albo, and that clip has gone viral. Did you guys see that clip?
Yes, I was in the group.
I might just play it quickly just to get your take on this, because what struck me about it was just, like, I think, like you said, Mark, and why I'm bringing this up is you talked about how Topher really highlighted that we've got to stop believing that government is God, and we've got to stop believing that these people are omnipotent and smarter than us and immune to things. And you've got to think about, like, you take away the office for a minute, who is someone like Anthony Albanese or whoever it is on either side of the political aisle? I don't know if you've seen the videos of Macron before he became the president, and, you know, those mashups that have gone viral of Macron when he was younger, dancing around and parties, and Zelensky, you know, as his TV show days, and when he used to dress up in glitter suits and dance. And what it did for me was just really made me realize these are just human beings, right? They're fallible. They've been lauded with this temporary power. If you look at, Tucker, he really articulated it well. And I'll just play this video on X.
And Tucker's going at everyone at the moment, isn't he?
He's going hard. But I'll play this just to get your thoughts, because it's very interesting hearing an outsider talk about our PM. And I sort of have mixed feelings about it, which I'll share afterwards. But let's just watch it together, and then we'll see how we go.
Take someone like Anthony Albanese. What does it cost to buy off some sort of low-grade spiv like Anthony Albanese? I don't know. I haven't tried. But my guess is you could probably buy Albanese for less than it costs to buy, say, a new Tesla. It's not expensive. This is a person with no job prospects, no obvious skills, who has the respect of nobody, including his wife. So it's like, why would you just buy him? And by the way, I'm not attacking, you know, your prime minister. I'm not singling him out, or your lawmakers. I've actually visited Canberra and been up to your parliament, and there's some awfully nice people. Ralph is one of them, great guy. They're very much like the people who run my country, the legislators who run my country. You know, they're people who, you know, in a better economy would be selling used cars. but they can't. And so they're your lawmakers and they get pensions. And but it's all very, if I can just be honest with you, it's all very low grade. These are not impressive people. They're not making a ton of money. They're not creating anything. They're bureaucrats. And so what does it cost to buy them off? Oh, not very much. A lot less than it costs to invade. Now, I'm not saying your lawmakers have been bought off. I'm stating unequivocally they've been bought off. There's no question about it. And it's obvious in what's happening in your country. And the first reason you know that your government has been bought off by China is that your country is being invaded in a way that is designed to make you not notice. And you're being invaded through immigration, refugees and legal immigrants. 200,000 a month. 200,000 a month. No country can sustain that level of immigration without falling apart, period. Especially not a country of 26 million. Now, if you think about it, and by the way, Australia being a very decent country, very much like Canada, very much like the United States, you're not encouraged to say anything about this or you're a bad person because you're offering a better life to people and like, how dare you not do that? What's never noted is that you are stealing the future of your children when you do that in a bunch of different ways. For one, the most obvious, your kids can't afford.
So there you go. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know if we're bringing in 200,000 people a month, but you know, there's a lot of numbers that get thrown around. But it's interesting to see his take. What I take from that is like, this is how a lot of people from outside the country look at Australia, and it's sad, right? Which once was such a powerful country, and now that you have people like this that basically joke about it, it's pretty disappointing if you ask me.
I don't think he was joking, Eric. I think he was quite serious.
It's 45,000 a month, according to the latest stats, where they say about 1,500 a day are arriving. It's 45,000 a month. So, you know, it's interesting hearing that from an outsider.
And it's not like he doesn't understand Australia. He came to a speaking tour not so long ago with Clive, so he got a pretty good understanding of what the country's about. So it wasn't like a pot shot from afar.
Yeah, there's some interest, like just to give people just a little bit of context of how important these roles. I mean, we know how important that being a prime minister is or being in power in a country is. But I just want to share something to add to this, and then Mark, I'll get your take, which was a guy called Michael Newman gave a speech in Australia just a few weeks ago, former senior trade commissioner. And he basically compared the Australian bureaucracy since the Labor government has come in, just to put some numbers around how much it's changed from a bureaucracy point of view. And this is where Tucker was getting to, saying there's, you've got too many bureaucrats. You've got these bureaucrats that are out of control and not necessarily that bright, and they're killing your country. But just to put some numbers here that I pulled out of this speech, there is 140 public servants for every 1,000 Australians. Now, is that a lot or is that a little? Like, if you compare it to Japan, in Japan, there's only 38 per 1,000 people. There's 2.5 million bureaucrats in Australia. So of the working people in Australia, 2.5 million of them work for the government, which cost us $232 billion a year, or $250 billion a year. To put that in perspective, in Japan, which has five times our population, they have only 3.3 million and they cost $270 billion. So for a country five times our size, so $232 billion in Australia, $270 billion in Japan. 17% of Aussie workers are government, of people of working age in Australia. 17% of the population works for the government. In Japan, it's 5%. And our senior bureaucrats get paid up to $1 million. The highest paid public servant in Japan is $250,000. And we're growing at a rate of $50 billion a year in bureaucratic costs in this country. $50 billion a year growing. So you can talk about padded out government. And this is why you see people leaving, partly is because that's all got to be paid for by people who don't work in cushy government jobs. So interesting. But yeah, comments.
The numbers are shocking to me.
Yeah.
Like they're astronomical, right? Like I'm all for, you know, a country to be you know, run properly and, you know, government jobs and the rest of it. But when there's so much bloat, if you ask me, in those numbers.
140 per thousand. To administer 1,000 people, 140 people. That's pretty crazy, if you ask me. I don't know. It just seems high.
It seems high.
It gets back to what we were speaking to before. It's right. If you go back and look at all the case studies and look through history and look at all the different countries and Western worlds, et cetera, it's like when the government shrinks in size and regulation shrinks in size, generally it has better outcomes than when it grows and bloats in size. And so this is, I mean, forget about the personalities for a minute. The mathematical problem that we're facing is that the government is growing in size compared to the
billion at $1 billion a week. The payroll is growing by $1 billion a week,
and that just doesn't have good outcomes long term. It just doesn't. And you know, I honestly do not think Anthony Albanese is an evil person. I know he gets a bad rap in the media, and yeah. I don't think he's evil. Do I think he's special or super intelligent or one of the greatest leaders that we've ever seen? No, I don't. And I don't know if that's because he doesn't do a good job of selling himself. I don't know if that's because the country is in a little bit of a mess. But I would love to be able to have better access to someone like Albanese, to be able to ask him questions, to be able to talk about the key themes that we're constantly talking about. Why has our energy been sold to China in these long-term deals that aren't very beneficial for our country and aren't making us get the maximum ROI that we can get on our resources? Why are we bringing in so many people? You know, why are you appearing on podcasts like Abby Chatfield's, who does not have any understanding of economy? And, you know, everything that we're seeing at the moment, we keep saying these are symptoms, they're not the cause. The cause is always economical. And I just don't think Albanese puts himself in a conversation to answer and discuss hard questions. And I think that, you know, it's about time that he does put himself in these kinds of conversations. I'd love to get him on the show so he can come on and he can refute and rebut Tucker Carlson's comments. All right?
I would too. You're dealing with a lifetime politician, though. Like, this is what Anthony is. He's a lifetime politician. He's never worked in the private sector, as far as I can tell from my quick research. But maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think he has. But anyway, I just think we've got to raise the alarm bells for Australians to, you know, just be aware of this. This money doesn't come out of thin air. And where it comes from is debt. And that debt is going to be for your kids to pay off.
What I'm intrigued is if you do the math backwards, and if you generously put $1 billion a week or $50 billion a year, and you give them a generous pay packet of 120 grand a pop, it's around about 8,300 people a week getting recruited by the government. What are they actually doing? Like, that's bigger than my hometown that I grew up in.
Regulation change
a week.
They're making sure they're managing
compliance. Yeah, regulation.
They're managing the increase in regulation, right? Which is exactly the opposite of where we need to go. We spoke with Topher about the housing prices, right? Like, I'm of the opinion that it's not immigration that's causing the increase in housing prices. Yes, that's a factor, but the main factor is always the availability of credit. And the reality is, if it's not immigration, it's going to be rich Australians that have access to credit that are going to buy property, leverage up 5 to 1. They're going to buy a property, buy all the investments, or companies like BlackRock, etc. Like, someone will fill the vacuum. If it's not immigrants, it'll be someone else. If you want to create affordable housing for your citizens, then you need to be able to create affordable housing. In order to do that, you need to be able to create smaller housing that don't have everything that is regulated at the moment. You need to cut regulation back. But no one, who's having these conversations? Who in Australia of influence and leadership is having these conversations where, well, I strongly believe that the answers lie? Like, I can't find anyone. Instead, they've got the general public, you know, arguing over Palestine and the Australian flag. It's ultimate diversion, right? We need to start getting educated on the issues and having better discussions around the real issues.
Now, you mentioned housing crisis, and so did Topher yesterday. And I'd like to talk about an article here that I seen from the Financial Review Property Summit in Sydney. It's on the Master Builders Association website in New South Wales. So this was from September 5th. And so they're basically, there's a few things they're going over, obviously housing supply targets, planning approvals. I want to touch a little bit on the labor shortages and soaring wages. So ANZ chief economist Richard Yatsenga said, even if planning and approvals improve, labor remains the choke point. Australia, just in electricians, is short 17,000 electricians right now. Soaring wages. Veteran builder Nigel Satterley revealed site leaders and teams boss. With four trades. Is it? Yep. And four trades people can now earn up to $500,000 a year, with others around $250,000 a year, reflecting acute shortages. Project delays. Master Builders Australia CEO Danita Wan reported detached house build times have stretched from 6 to 9 months to 12 to 15 months, and high-rise projects from 3 years to 4 years. Now, this is one's very, very interesting, these two, last two. Migration and skills recognition. NAB CEO Andrew Irvine noted that out of 700,000 arrivals in 2024, just 5,000 had construction skills. O'Neill put that figure up to 10,000, but Irvine said it should have been 200,000. Long retraining times for skilled migrants remain a barrier. And this one is interesting. Dexa CEO Ross DeVernay said construction productivity has gone backwards in 30 years. Citing on unionized sites right now in Queensland are operating at 2.5 days a week. Imagine. So we're talking about 4 day work weeks, right? A unionized site, and this is from Dexis, who's a large company, 2.5 days a week, right? And then they have a few key takeaways. But this was interesting. Paul Schroeder, the CEO of Australian Super, if you can't safely, securely house yourself, then we really are, I think, bent and broken as a country.
Holy shit. Did you just
repeat that?
I want the listeners not to miss the significance of what he just said.
Yeah, you're telling me that
this is not some marginal, over opinionated influencer like me. This is a dex, of marginal intelligence. Yep. You're talking about a corporation and the head of the NAB bank.
So this was from the agenda of the Financial Review Property Summit in Sydney, right? So this is literally on the Master Builders Association of New South Wales. So this isn't just some random Instagram post that I found from some, guy overseas. This is real, right? So takeaways for builders, right? Labor shortages are now the biggest barrier to housing supply, inflating wages and stretching build times. So
immigration. Yeah. So there's a few numbers I want to just highlight here, double click on. 5,000 of 700,000 immigrants
with construction
in the middle of it, in the middle of the biggest housing crisis that we've seen ever. Only 5,000 of 700,000 immigrants have any construction experience, right? It's not like we're setting a high bar here. We're not saying to come into the country, you need to be a rocket scientist or a millionaire or anything. You just need to be able to swing a hammer and have some trade skills.
Uh-huh.
5,000 of 700,000. That's the first one. And the other massive one for me was the average unionized building site is what? What was the number there?
2.5 days a week on average.
Productivity.
And at the same time, Slattery is telling us that they're getting between 250 and 500 a year.
Well, some can earn up to 500,000. Well, the article starts, right, and you can see it here, right? Brickies on 500,000, ? Now, obviously, that's a hook, right? It's a bit of propaganda. But
2.5 days.
At the end of the day. Yeah, 2.5 days.
The country's fucked.
That's why you can't get apartment projects off the ground. People aren't building. Like, I know developers. I know some large developers that are avoiding high-rise union sites altogether because of that exact reason. Because what happens is this. It's all built in. I've said it over and over and over and over again. It's all built into the end price.
You can't build a country working 2.5 days a week. This is how fucking lazy and oh my God, it makes me.
I don't know if it's late. There's probably.
Well, maybe not lazy. Regulation.
It's regulation, right? Like it's literally, you know,
there needs to be
it's a regulation.
Fucking, there needs to be an inquiry into this, like a fucking government. Like that's fucked.
Yeah,
like, our product living in cars.
Our productivity is so bad, right? Like our productivity is so bad that this is what's happening. This is the result. And this is what we keep talking about. This is what happens when the government has too much control, when the majority of jobs are going to government and bureaucratic people, then we become unproductive. We need to start investing in private industry. We need to start doing better apprenticeship courses, better, like less regulation. We need to fast track apprenticeships. We need, this is the problem. This is the problem with bloated governments. When government becomes God, things go bad.
And there's no end in sight. And this is why when you look at basic supply and demand, right? Everyone loves Bitcoin, right? Because it's, right? There's going to be 21 million. That's it, right? It's scarce, right? Gold, who knows how much gold there is. Property is an example. In this country right now, when I give you those stats and the amount of immigration that's coming in, right? As a property owner, I look at that and go, I feel bad for the people that aren't in the market. I really do. Cause I still feel that everybody, like he just said, right? He said it at the end. All right. The CEO, Paul Schroeder of Australia Super, if you can't safely, securely house yourself, then we really are, I think, bent and broken as a country. Right. This you should be able to actually not own your own home. Cause I mean, it'll take you 30 years to pay off an average mortgage, most people, right? But at least you have that little slice. And me, as a property investor, I look at this and I go, that's sad, but it's helping me because property prices are increasing by the day, by the week, by the month, right? Enjoy because supply and demand. But this is why I'm buying more property because the writing is on the wall. Like the writing
until there's a revolution, like fuck correct. Me.
Something's got to give. I'll be honest with you, something's got to give. But it's like anyone that's buying Bitcoin, right? Why are you buying Bitcoin? Because you think it's going to be going up more in value than anything else. Why am I buying Bitcoin? I'm doing the same. But why am I buying property? Because the stats are telling me to buy property, right? Because the government at the moment is the best BDM in property right now. You know, like.
I think you also, like, no offense, but I think you also have a skewed view because you live in the Gold Coast, right? You live in the best property market in the country, right? Mm. And so anytime that this shit happens in the Gold Coast, it doesn't matter because the demand is there and you are able to get it on the other side. But there's thousands and thousands and thousands of builders and developers that have gone bust in Melbourne the last 4 years. Because they can't get it on the flip side.
No, but the thing is, that being a builder right now, right, would be one of the most difficult jobs because how do you price anything, right? Like developers, I know developers right now. So a friend of mine told me, a very successful developer, he's taken a year off. This is a guy that used to build a lot of homes. He's just taken a year off because he's just like, what do I do?
I've got good mates that built residential homes that aren't building them anymore. They've stopped building them.
I met heaps of them at Nomad. I've had people book calls with me that are just saying, I'm not getting out of bed for the risk and the reward that's there at the moment. I hear this, Eric, and it just infuriates me. And it comes back to like, you know, like you
said. How much is cultural, Adam? How much is cultural? If the bank can't find a freaking closed loan document, like how much of the problem is actually cultural as well?
Eric sent me a meme during the week and it's like how Australians respond to a housing crisis. And it's like this guy just dancing in Ibiza in Europe and like doing lines of coke and getting on the piss. And I'm like, it's fucking true, mate. Like that's actually for, a, you know, like there's two.
Did you watch it to the end? Did you watch it to the end? Minus 3,450,000.
Yeah. Well, it's two speeds, right? So that demonstrated one side of the aisle, which is the rich, right? And the rest of Australia is fucking struggling. And somehow they're marching on Sydney Harbour Bridge about stuff that's going on elsewhere, which is terrible. Yes, genocide's terrible. Guess what? You know, right-leaning people don't believe genocide's amazing. Like, can you get that through your fucking head, you dumb lefties? You need to be marching for real issues is what we're trying to say, right? Like what Mark said, we need to not be like, I can't believe.
Well, I don't think marching's going to help. I honestly think we've crossed the Rubicon where marching is not going to make a difference.
No,
I'm not trying to be unpatriotic, and I'm not trying.
Well, Mark, people said this about the UK, right? Like they've asked me, okay, great,
UK's a million, fine. They're cooked.
Yeah, a million people turned up, but what's really going to happen because you marched on the streets? Well, interestingly, this week the independents in the UK have now got a majority in all polls. They've got more support than the Tories and the other side combined, the two major parties. The political shift is happening. Because they're starting to see this kind of stuff. But the UK has gone through so much more pain than Australia. But unfortunately, I think the only thing that's going to cause this is like Australians going through more pain because...
Adam, yes, the outcome becomes, okay, so we vote out the lefties and we vote in the righties, right? We got our people, but nothing changes unless we fix technology and productivity. That's why you're seeing the massive AI war at the moment between China and America. You're seeing all this money being spent on chips, and Nvidia today just announced that they've invested $100 billion in OpenAI. Last week, they invested $5 billion in Intel because everyone is going hell at a gate at this AI thing. What we could vote out the left in UK and put in the right. We could do the same here, but nothing's going to change unless we go back and fix these broken systems. And
what we need, Mark, is
the leaders who can do it.
Yeah, it's not about right or left, right? It doesn't matter about right or left. I would vote Labor if there was a revolutionary figure leading Labor, somebody who would, you know, like a Javier, whatever it is in Argentina, that kind of person needs to come in Australia and say, listen, wake the hell up. 2.5 days productivity, whether it's laziness, whether it's government, red tape, whatever it is, it has to go. Like we can't, the country's going to be dead in the water if we're spending 2.5 days trying to build our way out of this problem. Or we got, radical change to immigration policy, radical change to red tape around getting houses built. This is what we need is a leader that will stay. I don't give a shit where they're from, but I reckon the time will come with that. It doesn't matter where they come. We just need a personality. Somebody's got the skills and the chops and the balls.
I guess that if I had to gun to the head, had to make that bet with you, I'd take the opposite side that it's not going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is because we're too far in the mess with debt and the incentives are not aligned for someone to come in and to try and do that. And even if they did, they probably wouldn't be able to pull it off.
That's why I left, because I agree with you.
Right? And
I could not see, of all the countries in the world, Australia is maybe the least likely for it to happen because we crucify politicians, and I get it, but there's no incentive for them to do it.
And so that's the big point, right? The big point is that we need to start becoming realists. We need to start becoming pragmatic with what's actually going on. And we need to get educated, because thinking that going through a march and asking them to change is going to create change, they're completely different things.
Getting educated is a key, right? Like understanding these stats, right? So doesn't matter what you're investing in, right? You got to look at the details. You want to invest in Bitcoin, buy the Bitcoin standard book before you buy the Bitcoin, like Adam said. Before you buy property, do a bit of research. Or like, these are stats. These are real stats that are being put on government websites. So this isn't just fake propaganda. So when you look at that, and then you talk to someone at a barbecue, and they're like, oh, yeah, the housing market's going to crash. How can it, other than them abolishing immigration altogether, or a black swan event of some kind, when you look at basic supply and demand, we're building nowhere near enough houses, right? 2.5 day work week on unionized sites, where any high rise building, basically over 20 to 25 stories, is a unionized site across the country. And then we've got migration coming in nonstop. Like, how does it, and it's not just, there's certain pockets, of course, but even Sydney is going through the roof. Like, there was I seen the other week, man, there was an auction in the western suburbs, and it went for a shitty little house for $1.6 million. And there was like 100 people there, 30 registered bidders, and people are getting pissed off that they didn't buy it. Like, it is incredible. It is incredible scenes, but where does it stop? Like what you said, revolution or immigration stops heavily or the red tape stops, the head demographer in the country that we had on 3-4 weeks ago said it perfectly. He goes, Australia is designed this way. High property prices is designed this way in this country. That's it. The numbers, that's what the numbers told him. He's the demographer. We're not the demographer. We're not the one looking at stats and numbers all day. Every once in a while, we see an article and then, you know, say some numbers. This guy said that there was 700,000 in 2024. Tucker Carlson just said there's 200,000 a month, which is 2.4 million. Like, there's a lot of different numbers being thrown around. But at the end of the day, you guys can see what's happening, and it's very, very, very clear.
Yeah, every politician we've had on the podcast or libertarian or whatever always say, "Oh, cool, we all understand the problem. What's the solution?" And no one's really come up with this profound solution. But then I think going back to the Pauline podcast, Mark, when we talked about the preference votes and whatnot, regardless of what ideas these got, these guys are never going to get up anyway. So, I mean, you have all these fantastic ideas for change, but it's pretty futile, right?
We've gotten to the point in the cycle where the solution is either austerity, right, where you just go on a massive tightening of the belt. And even in Argentina, that's not working. He just lost his recent elections. He just lost a bunch of power. At Javier Milei just lost a bunch of power in his recent elections because it's not working. Austerity doesn't work. We've gotten to the point where the least painful way to solve the problem is to inflate the debt and debase the currency. We say this every week, right? But the point is, no one is coming to save you and no one is coming to save your country. You have to take the personal responsibility to do it yourself. Like Eric buys up all the property on the Gold Coast. Yeah, people can have a go at him in the comments, but he's taking the personal responsibility to read the tea leaves and go out there and buy up all the property in the Gold Coast. Adam's invested in Bitcoin. James is doing property developments. I'm investing in tech and trading. Right, this is the answer. No one's coming to save you, and you have to do it for yourself. That's the answer, because that's the only and least painful way out of this is to debase the currency and inflate the debt. That's what's going to happen. It's baked in the cake, no matter how many marches occur.
And if you don't understand what that means, guys, ChatGPT, Grok, whatever, is your friend. Explain to me how countries get out of these problems by inflating the currency, debasing the debt, all that. And I just want to close with this because I'm on a tight deadline today, guys. Got to run. But one of the talks that did capture my attention was talked about the Genius Act in the US, which was the US basically opening the doors to USDT digital tokens, right? And we haven't got time to cover it today. But this speaker said when Trump did that, he changed the financial system in a not dissimilar way to going off the gold standard, yet people really don't understand what they've just unleashed. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole, start having a look at what Trump did there, because, you know, that Genius Act and what that opens for the US to try and do exactly what Mark is talking about, continue to export the debt and deflate away. But, I'd love to talk about this another week, but the other countries are well and truly onto it. And this is why we're seeing boosts in gold. We're seeing governments stack gold. And, so we haven't got time to get into it today.
I was going to show you the chart, but yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, gold's going through the roof because the rest of the world's going, you know what, America? We see what you're doing. We're not so interested in taking more of your US dollars in any form. And so this is a whole nother area of study. But, Mark, I think there's a good place to end on... Look, we can sit here and bellyache about it as much as you want on pods, but at the end of the day, if you care about you and your family, then the only answer is get active, get into hard assets, find your thing and follow it. I want to finish just with one little good news story, which is that when we were in London, I was inside the media pen and I saw this guy with his mate. His mate was in a wheelchair in a red beret, so a British patriot soldier in a wheelchair, and the guy behind him was his buddy who was also a soldier. And I spoke to him and I said, "Mate, what are you doing here?" And he said, I said, "Do you mind me asking you on camera?" And I asked him on camera and he said, "My son committed suicide, an ex-patriot, 3 weeks ago." because he couldn't get any support from the government. And I think he may have actually been homeless as well, the dad. And he said, it just drives me insane that we have so many, you know, illegals coming in on black dinghies across the channel, and they're getting put up in 4-star hotels and fed and all this stuff. And my son got nothing, and he did 3 tours for this country. Anyway, I clipped this thing and it went onto Instagram, and it's now at 3.2 million views. It's gone absolutely viral. And I didn't get his name, but his name turned out to be Paul. And Paul saw the clip on Instagram, reached out to me just to say, oh my God, like he said, my everybody I know is contacting me saying, oh my God, Paul, I saw this clip of you and it's just gone everywhere. And then his wife reached out, Dawn, and said, I said, is there anything we can do for you? And they said, well, his funeral's coming up and we're struggling to get the money to pay for his funeral. So because of Unemployable and that clip and then putting it on Instagram, we were able to raise, I think now £10,000 to give him an amazing send-off and get some support to the family. So I just wanted to really thank, you know, everybody who donated to that, and just being able to give direct help to people who really deserve to get, you know, help. And so they've sent me a few DMs now and photos of their son, Rob, and the whole family has actually, just to sort of express their gratitude for us shining a light on, you know, that very sad part of life. So, yeah, good news story in the end that we're able to, you know, raise funds for that family, which is great.
And I just want to say one last thing, guys, is I know we talk about some heavy topics on these podcasts and some of it, they're heavy, right? Some of it sounds depressing and where it's going, but like Mark said, you got to choose what you're going to do. You can only rescue yourself. No one else can, right? We're making our own decisions. Mark is risking every day. I'm risking every day. James, Adam, you know, for heaven's sakes, the guy sold everything, you know, he's living out of a suitcase. Like that's massive, massive decisions that need to be made. And one thing that you guys take out of this podcast is make a decision. Whether right or wrong, you're not going to know what it is. Just make a decision, right? If that's moving overseas, move overseas. If it's quitting your job and starting that new one, if it's, you know, starting that business or getting together with a mate and buying a property together, if you can't afford one yourself, just take action. Because we know a lot of you guys listen to this week after week after week after week. But the key is taking action. And one thing Topher did say is don't think about the outcome, right? We attach ourselves to the outcome. Don't attach yourself to the outcome. Just follow, just go through the journey and enjoy the journey.
Right? Yeah, roll with the punches. They're amazing, amazing sentiments, Eric. And you know, hearing the story that Adam just told, like I doubt that someone like Paul is able to catch his favorite podcast each and every day. He's got bigger issues, right? Survival issues. And, you know, we go on our rants and not for a minute don't I think about those kind of people that don't have the opportunity to learn and to listen to a podcast. But, you know, I think if you are listening to this podcast and we kind of tailor what we say to those listening, you are still part of that lucky club that you have the time and the space and the ability to turn on a podcast for an hour and 90 minutes. And so I guess it's a rally cry, like Eric just said, to, you know, maybe do a little bit more. And then by doing a little bit more, then we can help the Pauls of this world, and we can help our family, and we can help other people who are less fortunate, right? And that's how we help everybody, right? By helping ourselves first, helping our families, and then like if we have more than what we need, then we can help others as well.
Yeah, 100% agree. Guys, with that, let's wind it up this week. Thank you for watching. Drop a comment, share the content if you enjoy it. And as always, guys, thanks for making the time to be here. And we'll see you same time next week on Unemployable. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.